Stella. The six of us are gathered around a fireplace in the library. Everyone is holding a glass of wine, except Pradyumna, who is enthusiastically drinking scotch from an etched tumbler. I'm sitting in a wing-back chair next to the fireplace. My shoes are off, and I'm pointing my socked toes toward the hearth, trying to warm up. It was hot and humid out there today, but the temperature has dropped. Something about these thick stone walls and being so deep in the forest. We are truly in the middle of nowhere. It's enough to make a city girl nervous. I push the thought away and take a sip of wine. "To Gerald, congratulations on your win," Peter says, raising a glass. He's being so gracious, I think, given the situation. It can't be easy sitting here and knowing he's the first one to go home, especially considering the circumstances. Salt instead of sugar? It just doesn't make any sense. None of the rest of us had salt in the larger canister.
"It's really just a matter of making proper measurements," Gerald demurs.
His fastidiousness would be obnoxious if it wasn't so clear that he just can't help himself. He must love facts the way the rest of us love people. I hold up my wine glass and lean forward, clinking with the others. The wine at Grafton, just like everything else, is impeccable. I take a big, velvety sip. "I'm really sorry to see you go, Peter," I say, and I realize it's true. I am sad that Peter is leaving. It's amazing how just a day of being in the tent together bonds you to each other. I know that if not for Saltgate, I'd be the one heading home tomorrow. My breads were not up to par. They were not thought out or well planned, and bread doesn't forgive. I take another big sip, attempting to clear my head and forget that look on Betsy's face. Not disappointment, thankfully. I don't think I could bear that. But certainly not the delighted smile I'd been longing for. The others' breads showed me how inexperienced I am. Today was humbling, and I am happy and relieved to make it through to another day, whatever the reason. I tip the last of my glass back and reach for the bottle sitting on the low coffee table in the center of all of us. I don't know if it is the wine or the relief of today being over, but I have a warm feeling running through me. Whichever way it happened, by whatever miracle, I am thrilled that I've made it into day two of the competition. I promise myself that I'll do better tomorrow.
"I still can't believe I mistook salt for sugar. I swear, I even tasted it before I poured it in."
"Oh well, I guess it's just my time to go," Peter says. He puts on a brave face, but it is easy to see that he is unsettled.
"An easy mistake to make. I'm surprised it wasn't me, to be honest,"
Pradyumna says from across the circle.
"It's not hard if you look at the grain size," says Gerald, ignoring Peter's irritated glance.
Gerald seems to be enjoying his wine as well. His bow tie is undone and hangs loosely around his collar.
"Baking salt is generally finer than sugar."
"Duly noted, Gerald. Now, let's all let the man celebrate his last night with us in peace," says Lottie kindly.
Hannah is perched on a settee next to Lottie, holding her wine glass in her lap. She looks uncomfortable, and she's hardly spoken all night. It must be hard, being the youngest of us all. I can see how worried she is about the way people view her. I know this feeling. We always glamorize youth as we get older, but at that age, all you want to do is look grown up, even if you don't feel it. Especially if you don't feel it.
"So, are we all prepared for tomorrow?" Lottie asks, looking around the group and cringing as her gaze lands on Peter.
"Sorry, Peter.
I'm fine," he hams it up, tipping back his glass of wine, dramatically draining the dregs.
"What do you think the next bake will be?" I ask, the nervous feeling returning to my stomach. I've almost forgotten there is more, that this is going to start all over again every day until I am sent home. It suddenly feels exhausting.
"I hope it's pies, or maybe tarts," Hannah quips.
Pradyumna smirks and sloshes his scotch in his glass.
"I love a good tart."
I know it's a dumb joke,
but the wine is making me giggly, and suddenly I can't stop laughing. I lock eyes with Pradyumna across the room. His face is crinkled up in amusement. God, he's good-looking. Probably knows it, too. No, you stay away from that one, Stella. You don't need any more trouble in that department. It's hard to believe it has been only one day since we arrived. I already feel as though I know this group, like we've been through something together. It's nice to have a break from the real world, isn't it? Peter says, looking around at us, his eyes shining.
Hear, hear.
Pradyumna holds out his glass again and takes a sip. It is nice to get away. The week is going to fly by, I realize sadly. Bake Week has given me something to focus on. I worry what I'll do once it's over. I try to push away thoughts of going home, of the job I'll have to find once this is over. Stay in the present, I tell myself. Pies and tarts.
Well, I'm turning in.
Lottie stands up suddenly.
She's off to get a good night's sleep, unlike the rest of us. That's cheating, Lottie.
Pradyumna admonishes her playfully, shaking a fist at her as she goes.
You all better watch out. I'm a terror in the kitchen when I've slept well.
Lottie teases back, picking up her empty glass from the table and heading for the hallway. I feel so affectionately toward her after how she helped me find my way yesterday. I can't believe this woman nearly gave me a heart attack. I do wonder what she was doing up in that room. It seems like an odd coincidence for us to both wander into the same spot lost. Good night, Lottie, I call after her. I can feel my lids getting heavy as well. The room grows quiet. I really should stop drinking now if I want to have a decent baking day tomorrow. The wine tastes so good, though, and I can feel its warmth traveling down my body. I'll just finish the rest of this glass. A log cracks loudly in the fireplace, and I jump. God, that startled me, I laugh at myself. It must be creepy living here all by yourself. I turn to look at Hannah, surprised by the sound of her voice. She has collapsed to her side and is leaning on the arm of the settee. Her eyes look droopy with that heavy liner, and I worry suddenly that we've all encouraged her to drink too much. That's silly, though. As young as she is, she's not a child. I'm sure she's spent plenty of nights out with her friends, and she doesn't need a bunch of older people to tell her what her limits are. Betsy isn't technically alone. Gerald chimes in with that paternal voice again. There are 5 staff members who live on the premises. Annoyance flashes across Hannah's face. But I mean, they're not technically her friends. She looks around the library. And don't they leave at night? It's not like there's anyone to watch a movie with, and this house is just so big. The fire is growing low, but no one makes a move to add any wood to it. It's getting late, I realize. We should all go to bed. Tomorrow is going to be another big day. I tell you, I won't be sad to leave behind all the weird noises, Hannah says suddenly, interrupting my thoughts. Pradyumna perks up.
Oh yeah? What noises?
I swear I could hear someone walking around above me last night. She talks in a loud whisper, like she's afraid the house will hear her. But when I asked Melanie about it in the morning, she said no one was staying on the 4th floor.
I was wondering about the 4th floor, Pradyumna says.
His face is in shadow, but his glass of scotch catches the light, glowing a rich amber as though lit from within.
Has anyone seen a staircase that goes up there?
Well, there must be one, I say dismissively. I haven't explored the house much on my own after getting lost, preferring to stick to my known routes through the house, to the dining room and kitchen. Maybe it's hidden.
Traditionally, the top floors are servants' quarters, Peter says. The stairs are usually at the end of the halls, rather than connected to the main staircase. You know, tucked away so that the help didn't have to be seen.
So gross, I interject, rolling my eyes.
Victorians, Peter shrugs. I looked all over the 3rd floor and didn't see anything, Pradyumna says. Odd, isn't it? Having a floor no one can reach.
The corners at the library have grown dark and shadowy as the logs in the fireplace crackle. I feel an unpleasant shudder pass through me and try not to think of getting lost earlier. The room grows quiet. Are we all listening for creaks in the floorboards? Perdumna's finger traces the top of his empty glass. I see his eyes flutter to the liquor cabinet, trying to gauge if he should pour himself another.
I renovated a haunted house once, Peter says. Improbable, Gerald quips,
but the others lean forward in their chairs. Really? How did you know? Hannah asks, her voice so soft that it's nearly a whisper. I pull my feet in closer on the chair, tucking them under me. The blood rushes in my ears.
It was the usual stuff at first. Things moving, weird scraping sounds. But then there was the shape on the wall.
My heart lurches, and I suddenly wish he would stop talking. I have this thing, this problem. If I feel afraid, I just black out. One minute I'll be fine, and then suddenly my heart is pounding out of my chest and my body just shuts down. It nearly happened yesterday, but talking to Lottie helped pull me out of it. It's funny because I used to love scaring myself. I considered reading horror novels and watching true crime documentaries about gruesome murders a fun way to pass time. Now, I can't watch a scary movie or get into an elevator alone without it happening. Sometimes, I even feel it start when my thoughts turn dark on the way through my apartment to the bathroom at night. I know when it's coming because I'll experience a shift. First, my eyesight goes fuzzy around the edges and then narrows into a dark tunnel. My body will start to feel very heavy and then like it is floating away from me. The next thing I know, I'm waking up on a floor somewhere with no memory of what happened. I breathe in deeply, trying to fight it. I would be so embarrassed if I just passed out in front of these people I barely know. What kind of shadow? Where did you see it? Hannah asks, her voice sounding far away.
Peter leans in. I was redoing a stairwell of a very old house. I'd removed an old chandelier to clean it. It was a heavy one, loaded with crystals. The shadow was on the landing wall near the bottom set of stairs. It looked like a figure. At first, I thought it was a breeze blowing through the drapes from the window on the landing. But then, one completely cloudy day, I saw it. The shadow of a figure swaying back and forth. It looked like it was floating. I jerked around, looking for a curtain or something moving that would have been blocking or affecting the light. But nothing.
The edges of my vision start to blur. That's too creepy! Hannah's voice slices through the air next to me.
Did you find out where it was coming from? Pradumna asks. Not exactly, but I did do some digging. Turned out a past owner had hung himself in the stairwell. From the chandelier. I put the chandelier back up and never saw the shadow again.
That is wild.
Perdumna slaps his knee, the ice cubes rattling in his glass. Well, I should go to bed, I say as brightly as possible, attempting to hide my strange reaction. But I stand up quickly, too quickly. My head spins and I grab the back of the chair to keep from falling over.
Are you okay?
Peter jumps to his feet, reaching out to me. Fine, fine. I just probably shouldn't have had that last glass of wine. I wave his concern away with a sweaty palm, a smile plastered on my face. At least, I hope it looks like a smile. I suddenly want nothing more than to get into bed. I try to keep my voice light. Today was a lot. You all are going to crush me tomorrow if I don't get some rest.
You okay getting to your room? Peter asks.
I'm great. Thanks. Good night, everyone. But I'm not okay. Not really. I leave the library and stagger down the hallway, trying not to look into the eyes of the creepy portrait staring down at me, lining the brocade-covered wall. One foot in front of the other, Stella, step by step. I watch each foot make contact with the polished wood floor. As I walk,
I count backward in my head. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Very slowly, my vision begins to return to normal. I go upstairs and walk down the narrow hallway to my room. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. A reaction to a trauma, a therapist called my blackouts. Until we address what's happened to you, she'd said gently to me at one of our few sessions, these spells will continue to occur. I'd stopped seeing her soon after. Counting was the only idea of hers I took with me when I left, and it is the only thing that helps take my body out of panic mode. When I focus on the numbers, it transports me straight into the present moment, jerking me out of whatever fear state I've entered. It is the only thing that works. Well, the only thing besides baking. I didn't need therapy if I had baking, I reasoned. I avoided applying for new jobs and instead spent my time learning how to frost cakes, pipe filling into cream puffs, and knead perfect bread loaves. With baking, you are forced to exist only in the moment, or whatever you're making won't turn out. There was no fear in baking, I told myself. A lie, probably. I get to my room, flinging the door open. I half expect to see some sort of ghost, perhaps a man dangling from the ceiling. But the room is quiet and still, except for a curtain moving slightly in the breeze. I rush to the window and shut it, closing the latch, and turn back to the bed with its garden green canopy. I fall into it, leaving the bedside light switched on and tucking the covers up to my chin, counting backward until I fall asleep.